The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho, episode 180. Oh my goodness, 180 episodes. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to the Insane Clown Posse for joining us today. Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J not only are one of the biggest rap groups of our generation, they also have their own wrestling promotion, Juggalo Championship Wrestling. They've had runs in the WWE, in WCW, in TNA. They've taken bumps. They've worked matches. They built their own ring in their backyard when they were 9 years old, and they've been taking bumps ever since. It's also about the same time they started making music and rapping, and man, they have got some amazing stories about both. They're just like me. They play music and they wrestle. WWE locker room stories involving The Undertaker. WCW stories about Eric Bischoff and doing a moonsault. And wait until you hear who turned up for ICP's own Legends promotion. We're talking about the Juggalos, The Gathering, how pro wrestling is factored into the Detroit rap music scene and really inspired ICP's whole music career.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. The Remedy for Boredom is here. Let's go for a ride with the Insane Clown Posse is here. Before we get to the ICP, I'm going to tell you all about my experience at Night of the Champions, how it went down, what happened, what the future plans are, all that stuff coming up here on Talk is Jericho. But before we get rolling, today's episode being supported by Burger King. All right, right now at Burger King, get the new extra-long jalapeno cheese battle. Feel the flame with two all-beef patties stacked with spicy jalapeno peppers, now part of the $2 for $5 deal. Only at Burger King, limited time only, restrictions do apply. Okay, talking about cheeseburgers is funny. The other day I was watching Ring of Honor, and I saw this guy come on screen. Super skinny, probably weighed, I don't know, $1.40 maybe, and he was called Cheeseburger. Did some research, talked to a couple of my friends that work in Ring of Honor, and they told me they called him Cheeseburger because when he showed up for wrestling school, they said this guy is so small, he should eat some cheeseburgers. That became his wrestling name. And I just love this guy. In the classic tale of the small guy, whether you're talking about Colin Delaney or whether you're talking about Spike Dudley or any of those type of guys, I just love him because his name is Cheeseburger. There you go. Didn't know anything about him. Didn't even see him. I just said I love Cheeseburger. I posted it on my site that Cheeseburger is my new favorite wrestler. Ring of Honor sent me a Cheeseburger shirt, which I wore on Instagram. My children love Cheeseburger. I think they just love the concept of a wrestler called Cheeseburger, as do I. Big props for Cheeseburger. Just goes to show, doesn't matter how big you are, how small you are, you too can follow your dreams and make it big in anything that you choose to do. Speaking of big, okay, so Night of Champions pay-per-view a few days ago, and I was the guest partner for Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose to face the Wyatt family. And man, it was a great match. Just we really, really had a good time with that. Everybody worked hard. That Braun Strowman, man, he's huge. He's massive. He's super, super green, but he's not stupid. He's got some intelligence, and he's a good guy. He knows how green he is. He listens, and man, we put on a good little show there. How did that come to be? Well, I got a call about 2 or 3 weeks prior asking me if I was available to do Night of Champions. It was Ash the Fish Expert's birthday party on Saturday. So Sunday is usually the recovery day. People stay over at our house. So it's not like I'm not available, but I'm not going to be leaving the house for no apparent reason. So I said, it depends. What do you want me to do? And they said, well, we want you to be the guest partner for the Night of Champions. And I said, well, that also depends on where are we going with it. Always want to know what the story is. Had a couple meetings back and forth about what I want to do, where I want to go with it. The powers that be agreed with me, and we were on. Bingo, bango, bongo. So I decided that I could have to miss the day after Ash the Fish Experts party, which is fine. They all played football and had fun and played family stuff with my dad, who was in town, the babyface assassin, Ted Irvin, and a lot of cool people were around. But that's the price you got to pay when you got to make the donuts and keep your family supported. So I went to Houston. I flew in, got in at about 2 o'clock, and then I just kind of hung around in the airport because I didn't need to be at the arena till about 4. And when I got there, I was going to be hidden away, sequestered. So I just hung out in the airport until about, I said like 4 o'clock, had something to eat, sat down and read a book, just kind of wandered around because I didn't want to go down to baggage claim because sometimes fans wait down there. I didn't want anybody to see me. I only had carry-on bags. And so I waited until 4 o'clock. Then I had had a driver come get me, had him pick me up at the departure drop-off. So that way I could bypass the baggage claim altogether. Got into this unmarked car and drove all the way down to the arena in Houston, which I'm not sure what the name of it is. I forgot, but I know it's the same arena that I worked, the same arena that I saw Rush in earlier this year, which is cool. So I went down to the show, and as we're driving on the corner, you get to the area where all the fans are waiting. I have to go down into the floor of the car, kind of hide my face, go down the rampway. Mark Carano's waiting for me. I get out. He grabs my bag. They take me straight into this room, like a side dressing room, which is great because usually you have to hide on the bus when you're hiding. You know, there's a bunch of buses down there, and this is probably, I think this is the fourth or fifth time I've been like the hidden guest. I'm trying to think about it. When we did the original Y2J appearance back in 1999, I wasn't hiding. I was hanging around all day, but it was a different world back then. There was no real social media to stooge off. Then I came back in 2007, and I was going to hide, but then they decided they wanted me there earlier, so that's when I gave the torchbearer the clothesline, so that was kind of hidden, but not really. I showed up there backstage beforehand. Then there was the 2012 when I came back? Yeah, 2012 when I came back for the end of the world. That time I hid in a bus until it was time for me to come out and make my appearance. Then I hid in Phoenix for the Royal Rumble, which was the best one. That was my favorite. I hid there all day long. Then I hid again last year when Miz came out as the big surprise. Then I came out and supplanted Miz, and then I nailed Miz, and then the Wyatts attacked me. That was another time that I was hiding, and then yesterday I was hiding as well. Hiding in a room with Kane, so at least I had Kane with me. We got a chance to shoot the breeze and hang out for a bit. Then Jamie Noble, who was working as the producer in the match, came in. We discussed things together, figured out a few ideas. Then the other guys came in, the Wyatt family and Ambrose and Roman. And we put together the match and had some pretty cool things in there, pretty cool ideas, and discussed certain things. And I'm not going to divulge all of that because not everything, you guys don't need to know everything, you know? And it's funny because when you watch back today and read the Twitter, and it's like, Jericho tagged in on Reigns and lost the match for the people. Why would you do that? And then Jericho walks out and gives Ambrose a shove and just keeps walking. Why would you do that? Seeds planted. Seeds planted. Okay? Storytelling. That's what we do. That's what I do. It's the only reason why I'll come back for TV is for storylines. If not, I'm not going to do it. I love doing the summer tours, the fall tours, just working the live events. I can do that until the day I want to retire, trust me. But if something catches my eye and something catches the office's eye and we decide to go for it, you go for storytelling. So yes, I'm sure a lot of people were disappointed that I wasn't on Raw the following night. Nor will I be on Raw anytime in the near future. Got a lot of stuff coming up, okay? Still got a few shows left here on the WWE Fall Tour. Got a lot of shows left, actually. This weekend in Toronto, Rochester, and Syracuse. Then I got Trenton and Madison Square Garden. Then I got 3 shows in Saudi Arabia. Then I got 3 shows in Mexico. Then I got the Kiss Cruise. Then I got 3.5 weeks overseas with Fozzy. I'm booked up. But I'll tell you this. if you watched the match at Night of the Champions and had a lot of questions to ask, well, maybe those questions will get answered. Maybe. Or maybe I'll never be back on TV again. Maybe it was just a one-shot deal so Jericho can come back and job to the new guys. Because that's all Jericho does, says a lot of people. Those of you who say that don't know shit. Okay? Storytelling. That's what we do. That's what we do here in the WWE. That's what we do here on Talk is Jericho. And to divulge the entire story to you right now, it wouldn't be very funny, right? It wouldn't be very good. It wouldn't be very fun. So maybe, yeah, maybe that was just a one-shot deal. Maybe it was some storytelling. And I think that those of you who know me will know which one of those answers is true. But you're going to have to wait because nothing happens quickly in the world of Chris Jericho. I could be back on Raw next week. You never know. Or I might not be back on Raw again. Not trying to string you along. Not trying to work you guys. Just giving you all the information that I choose to give you right now, knowing that stories are how we work around here and how things go. And as far as Night of the Champions was, you know, I'm not doing pay-per-view reviews of shows anymore because I find that everyone else does them, and I don't really get a kick out of it. But I was there yesterday. I love the pay-per-view. I think I give congratulations and props to Nikki Bella for doing a good job as the heel champion, longest-running champion in Divas history. Props to Charlotte for coming out and winning. She did a great job. I think New Day is by far one of my favorite acts on the roster right now. Always good to see the Dudleys back. I think the Ascension with with Stardust is an excellent mix. I even like the Lucha Dragons with Adrian Neville. I think John Cena, it still makes me laugh when people go that John Cena sucks. Still don't think John Cena can wrestle. I haven't seen him have a bad match in probably 10 years. His match with Rollins was incredible. Sting worked his ass off. Unfortunately, got hurt. Hopefully, he's feeling better now. I think our six-man was a blast. The reaction. I forgot to tell you. So we go through the match, and then I'm waiting there. And then as soon as the girls' match is over, they take me kind of through the hallway, and I walk past all my friends and like, hey, man, what's going on? Well, you Jericho, you're here. I can't believe it. And go into the Gorilla, say hi to Vince, and say hi to Triple H and Arn Anderson and everybody else. And then everyone goes to the ring. And everyone's waiting who's going to come out. And then a little goofball got in the ring. Some fan got in the ring. And you know what, dude? He's lucky I wasn't in there. I would have knocked his block off. I'll say it before I'll say it again. Do not get into the ring as a fan. It's not funny. It's not something that's going to get you over. And we do have the right, this has been told to us by the police, to kick your fucking ass if you get in the ring. A lot of guys don't. I do. And there's nothing you can say. It's like breaking into our house at 3:30 in the morning. If you break into my house, I can hit in the face right with a baseball bat and nothing happens to me. So that's the same thing that happens. If you think you're being cute and want to get in the ring, remember what can happen. We have carte blanche. We're 007s. We can do whatever we want. Some guys will be nicer about it. Some guys won't, but stay the hell out of the ring. It's not funny. It's not cool. It's not safe. It's not fair to the rest of the people watching the show. It's stupid. It's unthought out. It's cowardly. And it's unacceptable. So don't do it. Anyways, so then the lights go down. The countdown starts. People start cheering. Out comes Jericho. Lighted jacket. And, you know, you could be a jerk and say it was the greatest pop ever. It was a great pop. It was huge. You know, was it Road Warrior pop worthy? I don't know. Steve Austin said it was. He texted me and said it was Road Warrior pop worthy, which is an old joke from the old days where the Road Warriors would always brag about how big their pops were. So it became a Road Warrior pop if you got a good pop. But it was great to be out there. The crowd was just chanting Y2J, Y2J. Some great little spots in there. I love working with the big guy, Braun Strowman. Obviously, Luke Harper, one of my favorites. I love Wyatt as well. Great little match. Crowd cheering, crowd going nuts, and then at the end, kind of unsure what to do when I bumped Ambrose and walked out. And like I said, stories are stories. They all start somewhere, and that's all I'm going to say about that. Mama always said you never know what you're going to get from the box of chocolates. And that's probably the worst Ferris Bueller imitation ever. If it was a Ferris Bueller imitation, it'd be really shitty. It's actually a Forrest Gump. All right, speaking of Forrest Gump, worst segue ever. Insane Clown Posse are here. I don't think Forrest Gump ever listened to ICP in his life, but he should have. because Shaggy T Dope and Violent J are great guys. They've got amazing stories to tell. Very unique. They did things their own way, which is how I like it. I got a special invite to hang out at the Lotus Pod, their studio and headquarters for everything ICP and Psychopathic Records in the outskirts of Detroit. And we had a great conversation about wrestling, music, all of this stuff coming up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, here at the studio, the home of the Insane Clown Posse.
The infamous Lotus Pod.
The Lotus Pod? Is that what we call it?
That's what we call it.
Is this
studio.
Like your studio is in here? Is this kind of like the headquarters for Psychopath Records, too?
Yeah.
You
know, and this is so funny. We were just talking as I was setting up this rig about how we've been in the same circles for such a long time, but never have actually met face to face. And it's like, I feel like I know you guys because you guys have been. We've been following each other for, the last 15 years or so, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, wherever I was, you guys just came right afterwards.
Yeah, we just missed each other.
Or before, right?
Yeah, one or the other, yeah.
You guys were working in ECW for a while.
Yep. You
guys worked in WCW for a while.
Yeah, first WWE. Then when you were in WCW, we were in WWE. Then we switched.
Yeah, we actually worked in WWF.
What did you do before in WWF?
We were with the Oddities.
Yeah, it was cool shit for us, you know, because we're in WWF, this is great,
yeah.
But the gimmick was,
Well, that the Oddities was
Kurgan,
and there was like a giant Santa. Silva,
yeah. Golga.
That was his name. Was he Golga?
It was John Tenta.
Yeah,
he was Golga. Yeah, and then they had a Cartman doll or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. And Luna Vachon.
And actually, my good friend Don Callis was like the manager, the Jackal. Wasn't he the manager?
He wasn't there when we were
there. Okay, he was gone at that point.
Yeah. But then we turned on the Oddities and joined the Headbangers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did that come into play? How did you end up in the WWF?
Well, they called us and wanted a song. For the ring music for the Oddities.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And for one of the, when they were putting albums out of the ring music
of the superstars music.
We actually got
music,
the platinum record around here somewhere.
Oh, okay.
For that record, yeah.
And so we said yeah, but we want to be involved, you know.
Right.
And we said we wrestle, and they had no idea that we are actually independent wrestlers.
Right.
Before
they didn't know how to work, you know.
Right. Right.
And they were like, send us a tape, you know. So we so we sent the tape. Then next thing you know, they flew us to Connecticut.
Yeah.
And then we got in there with
Tommy Pritchard.
Was it Tom or Bruce?
It was Tom.
Tom Pritchard.
Tom was training.
Tom Pritchard, yeah.
Got in the ring with him, and they videotaped it, and we did a bunch of stuff.
They did a match.
Yeah, we did a match
and
with
each other. We were just like, we don't even want money for the song. We just want to...
You just want to be on
right,
the show.
We just want to, we want to be out there,
So we started out at SummerSlam at Madison Square Garden, which was just off the hook.
That's your start.
Yeah, that's
they didn't. They didn't have us working then. We just came out to the ring with them, and then we'd interfere with, like managers do,
Right.
But, so we weren't actually involved in the ring angles.
Well, we got to trip his foot that
night. Right, yeah. But we weren't actually in the ring,
And then we said we want to keep going, so we just jumped on the tour right there.
So, because and just as a little bit of a backstory, as we were talking, you guys are a lot. There's only three of us that have done at the highest level of wrestling and music. You guys, myself, and then now Billy Corgan doing the TNA thing, booking.
Right.
He's kind of like he's made it to the top of that as well. But you guys started before there was an Insane Clown Posse as wrestlers. Is that correct?
Yeah. But the thing about Billy Corgan, too, he's not actually in the ring.
He's not in the ring,
bumps,
right. He's behind the scenes.
Right, yeah. So there's a whole difference.
Sure there is. Other than us, it's Y2J and ICP.
That's right.
And that's about all I can really think of.
You got the truth, too, but he's...
Truth,
he's,
right.
He's raps,
just getting started.
Not,
I know Jeff Hardy plays some music, too, but you're talking about,
right, actually sell records,
working in Madison Square Garden as a wrestling gang. But you guys started as wrestlers.
Yeah.
When you were growing up, this is what you wanted to do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, wrestling was our first dream.
We were backyard wrestlers, since were like, I was like eight, you know. And we, man, I wish I had a picture of it. We had like, I don't even know how, to this day, I have no idea how we built our ring in our backyard. It was just blood, sweat, and tears. We found railroad ties and pounded them in with rocks.
Yeah, the big railroad wooden stakes. Drilled
holes for hose. Everything was garbage picked, you know, of course. And, like, you know, then found hose and just pulled it mad tight. That's
garden
how,
hose.
That's how
that's deep, for the ropes.
Right, that's yeah. how deep the railroad ties were, so we could actually pull the garden hose tight enough where it didn't even bow in or nothing, you know, and then found some carpet to put down, you know.
So that you yeah, actually made your own ring.
Yeah, you could, yeah. Go, to
you could
rope,
actually go to the top rope and everything.
And then we found a big roll, this big industrial roll of tape. And it had, like, little Red Wing logos on it, you know what I'm saying? And we just, like, used that for turnbuckles. We just, like, taped it up, you know what I'm saying? So we had turnbuckles. We had the whole nines, man. It was great.
And this is when you guys were just kids. Yeah, we did it for years,
Yeah,
though.
I was serious, probably, like, 9,
we
10 years old.
We did it until we were, like, 17.
Right. We were those weirdos.
Until we, pretty much did the backyard thing until we jumped into the independence, you know?
So you were never actually officially trained. You guys were just learning as kids just by watching what you saw on TV.
He was trained. I wasn't really – I was never actually trained. He had a little bit of training.
We did some stuff with, believe it or not, Al Costello, who was working as a security guard.
Was he one of the Kangaroos?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fabulous Kangaroos.
Kangaroos, yeah. And, is this in Detroit?
This is in Detroit, yeah. And then we used to go down and see him every day, and he would take us into this room at the building where he was a security guard at, and it was just an empty room. There was no furniture, and we would get on the floor, and he would show us things, and you know, we did that every day. We'd take the bus downtown and do that every day and go see him, and the first show we were actually on, believe it or not, the main event was the Sheik versus Bobo Brazil, the original Sheik.
And this is like not like 1975. This is like 1990.
This is 1991.
So Sheik's probably like 80 or
That's
something,
right?
Right?
Yeah. They were so old that Bobo Brazil had two guys walking him to the
kidding
ring.
Kidding me?
I'm not kidding. They were walking him to the ring.
Wow.
And then when he got in the ring, he just leaned in the corner and held himself up in the corner. And Sheik would come over to him, and they'd do the deal. And Bobo never moved across the ring. He just stayed in the corner the whole time.
Wow, and that was the match.
That was the match. But it was still the Sheik versus Bobo Brazil, you know? And people were tripping to see it, you know? And I can always say, oh, my first match was, you know, the main event was Sheik versus Bobo Brazil. And, you know, make it sound like it was back in the old Kobo days.
Right.
You know, in reality, they were both, like, you know, real old. But it was them.
Yeah,
and it was awesome. And, you know,
so was Sabu around then at that point?
Yes, that was Sabu.
Yeah, the Elephant Boy. Yeah.
Sabu the Elephant Boy. That's what he went by.
His first name, right? Yeah.
And, you know, and also who started on, it was either their first match or their first year wrestling. I don't remember. But we made friends that day was Rob Van Dam. Mm. And he was in a tag team with a guy named Dango. And they were the something like the U.S. Express, some typical one. Of those.
And I remember, be on the same like cards as Rhino, you know, mm-hmm. back then when he was Rhino Richards, you know,
all the Detroit guys.
Yeah. You know, and I actually started out as his manager.
Okay,
you know, because I was like 16. I was like 100, like
you're a
40
skinnier
pounds,
guy, yeah.
You know
Shaggy
T-Dope, right,
skinnier
yeah.
guy. Violent J's the bigger
right,
guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this is way before that. You know,
okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I was just like a skinny guy. I was like, man, I'll be your manager. You know, I ain't trying to get in there and
so what was
get
your
broken.
Wrestling name?
I didn't have one as a manager.
Just
but,
manager.
But when we first started wrestling, actually, believe it or not, it was when we were doing our backyard wrestler, I had two gimmicks. I had the White Tiger, which was a mask wrestler, you know, made a sweet mask out of a T-shirt and all that good stuff, you know.
Right.
And then the Rhino.
Oh, okay.
Somehow, yeah, but which had went no coalition.
You couldn't use that one anymore
whatsoever.
Once he showed up.
Right? Well, no, because I never, like, did that, like, you know, on a bigger thing or whatever. Then later on, like, when we started doing independence for Malcolm Monroe and stuff locally, I was the sewer dweller.
The sewer dweller.
Yeah.
How about you, Jay?
I was Corporal Daryl Daniels. My brother was in Desert Storm, and okay. he would send home like
all the fatigues
and BDUs and everything. And I would wear the army gear, and I was Corporal Daryl Daniels, even though I had a fresh mullet and everything. You know what I mean? Right. I was, and I would yell, "Salute the corporal! Salute the corporal!"
I like how you didn't go too high. Like, you didn't want to be the colonel or the general. I'm going to be the corporal.
This is the
corporal.
I'll start
slow.
I didn't know. I thought the corporal was high. I thought that. I didn't know that the way it was.
That's like going to the ring as a yellow belt in karate.
Right.
I'm the yellow belt. I'm going to give you a first shot to the head. So you guys are going to the ring, and the Sheik is there, and Sabu is there. So you guys are actually working, you know, on the independent circuit in Detroit, because Michigan was a fairly healthy independent scene at that point.
The thing that was different about back then, you know, with the exception of Van Damme, Dango, and Sabu, everybody was old.
Oh, like right.
Back in the day, you know, when we started, I remember after we did that first show with the Sheik and Bobo, Al Snow was there, and he booked us for a show in Lima, Ohio, and it went from there. We just started getting bookings from there, you know, and every show we went to, all the dressing room was old. Everybody was old. You know, it's not like today where it's a bunch of young guys high flying. Yeah.
And it wasn't like, you know, we're super young, so it seemed like everybody was old. Yeah. They actually were old.
They actually were like 40s, 50s, 60s.
It was old fat guys everywhere, you know, and they, you know what I mean?
But you know what's funny? I started in 1990 in Calgary, and it was the same thing. There was a lot of older guys there. Actually, the guy who was the boss was a guy called Bulldog Bob Brown, probably 58, 59 years old, old fat guy, crew cut, and just would screw with you the whole time. You know, It was the same vibe, I think, anywhere you were, because there wasn't that influx of young guys wanting to be wrestlers maybe at that point in time. Yeah. I don't know.
And you go see an independent show today, it's all young guys.
Yeah. It's all young, smaller guys.
Bowflex guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I was calling Bowflex wrestlers.
So what finally led you to stop wrestling?
Because we kept wrestling. We got more and more serious into wrestling. At the same time, we started doing music, and music just took off for us much, much faster than wrestling. You know what I mean? And we started making money.
There's the difference.
You know, and we had way more success in music than we were having in wrestling, you know? So what happened was we stopped wrestling independently because this is back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to never want to be seen without the face paint.
Mm.
It's impossible nowadays.
Right, internet. Right. You know, this is pre-internet days.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, sure. It's like Kiss in the 70s. Right. You could do it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Now.
So, you know, we didn't want to ever be seen without the face paint. And what happened was fans of our music started showing up at our wrestling shows.
They were hearing that
we were on these shows. So they were showing up with cameras and stuff, taking pictures of us wrestling. We'd be wrestling each other, you know. Or stuff like that.
We had some super matches, man.
Against each other?
Oh, yeah, because we knew each other inside and out. You know what I'm saying?
So this is still Corporal Daryl Daniels?
I became Hector Hatchett.
Of course. And then who were you?
That's when I was the sewer dweller.
Oh, the sewer dweller versus Hector Hatchett. Yeah. Sounds like a good high school gym main event.
We used to tear it up. There's some stuff on YouTube.
What kind of stuff were you guys doing?
There was like, totally ECW influence, you know, bashing chairs, but like, you know what I'm saying? But it was still like some good wrestling in there on top of like, you know, it was borderline hardcore. It wasn't like to the point of barbed wire thumbtack shit yet.
But that was all new at that point.
That was like the raw attitude. Yeah. Days,
I started in FMW in 91. That's when I first started seeing, like, you know, the no rope barbed wire, blow up mines, death matches, and all this stuff. And then that kind of got transferred over to ECW, and then kind of became more of the normal thing.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's when it first started getting hot in Detroit a little bit. You know, like they'd have like the hardcore wrestlers like Pondo and Ian Rotten come in.
Madman Pondo and
shit. You know.
And when we made a little bit of money in music, you know, one of the first things we bought was a wrestling ring.
A real one.
Yeah. So we had a warehouse and we had a ring in it, and we'd get in there every day and work out in it every day. We'd have an hour-long match
every day, just on
your own?
Just to practice, train.
Just going and going and going
every day. For the exercise.
So when we were having these matches, for a promoter named Malcolm Monroe, and his promotion was called Insane Championship Wrestling, of course, influenced by ECW. You know, we were tearing it up. We were going in there, and, you know, we were in top shape, and we were just tearing it up. But we had to stop, you know, because Juggalos were showing up, snapping pictures. But
what we did do is we started doing every other week, we would do our own shit, NAW, National All-Star Wrestling, which we brought back. That was our division when we were little kids back there at wrestling. So we brought it back once we had a wrestling ring.
In a warehouse.
Right.
So we'd have kegs of beer. We'd invite all family our friends.
You know? Get a big party.
And we'd have a whole full-on card. You know, as professionals, we could do it. We have cage matches, all that stuff, you know. And for a time there, it'd be like 1 week wrestle for Malcolm, next week do our thing. Next week, wrestle for Malcolm. Next week, do our thing. You know, then eventually we stopped wrestling for Malcolm because, you know, like Jay was saying, all the pictures and stuff. But then we kept doing our thing for a little bit, you know. But then, you know, once we, you know, got signed to a label and she got really, really, really busy, we just kind of...
I didn't realize that you guys had done that much wrestling. I didn't realize it came all the way from teenagers, you know. That's a...
The cool thing was once ICP kind of took off for us nationally... In 1997, most of our fans didn't know we had anything to do with wrestling, mm-hmm. you know. And we put out this video called Stranglemania, which was flipping through a wrestling magazine, and I saw an ad in the corner, a small ad, and it said, thumbtack, barbed wire, exploding rings, you know, all this. And this was FMW tapes.
Okay, yeah.
So we ordered a bunch of them, and they had no commentary on them. It was just the matches. So what we did was we did the commentary on them as Violent J and Shaggy, but as these characters. I was Diamond Donovan Douglas.
3D. And Handsome Harley Guastella Guido.
And we did a comedy.
What is that one? What is it?
Handsome Harley Guastella. Also known as Guido.
Okay. Guido. And we did the commentary, comedy style, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we put that video out. We didn't own the rights to it or nothing.
And we were like totally breaking kayfabe, everything, you know?
Right.
Like,
so you were doing the commentary, then selling it back to.
To our music fans. And, man, that thing blew.
I've heard of that before.
It sold really well, you know? And so we had a show called Stranglemania Live downtown at St. Andrews Hall. And we hired a bunch of deathmatch wrestlers to come in for the undercard, you know? So this is like you said, it was brand new in America, you know?
It was like 96, I think.
Barbed wire, thumbtacks.
Yeah, just starting to get in here. Yeah.
All of that. We had a girls' thumbtack match on the show. We had all kinds of stuff. And in the main event, it was a steel cage match, me and Shaggy versus the Rednecks, or the Chicken Boys, they were called. And they came out with Confederate flags, and they were, you know, we got a thing against racist people.
Right.
And they, you know, they were playing.
So they're playing the racists?
Yeah, the racists. And
Southern racists.
Nobody knew we could wrestle at all.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew we knew anything about pro wrestling. And so it sold out. It sold out in advance, you know. People were like, what? ICP's going to wrestle? What the fuck? They didn't have any idea, you know, they went to see the spectacle, like, what is this going to be?
And then we came with some real shit.
And then we got in the ring, and we this is when we were in top form, you know what I mean? And we killed it. I mean, we were coming off the top of the cage. He took a bump from the top of the cage through a table on the outside.
Wow.
I did a flip off the top of the cage through a table on a guy. It was great. And that was one of the greatest nights of my life because the crowd was so intense, the show went so perfect, and that was our first time ever wrestling publicly as ICP, you know?
Okay.
And that was actually the tape that we sent to WWE when they called about us being on the soundtrack. So that's the extent of our pro wrestling before we went to WWE.
Okay.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Were you guys always too, when you were doing the wrestling in the backyard, etc., were you guys also rapping as well? Were you doing music too?
Yeah.
So it was, you guys wanted to do both.
Yeah, we were doing just like backyard wrestling.
The same equivalent. Yeah.
What is it about this area? It's funny because I'm driving here, and you know I'm following GPS, and I don't know. I know how to get from the airport to the Joe Louis. That's about it. So I'm driving, and you see 6 mile road, 7 mile road, and then of course 8 mile. Everyone knows that. And you guys are on 9 miles. So you guys are like 1 mile badder than Eminem. You guys are like one.
No,
mile
it's actually
cool.
The other way.
Oh, 1 mile worse. Right. Okay,
we're 1 mile.
We're 1 mile into the suburb. Right, it goes 8 mile down is the city,
but
8 mile up are the suburbs.
Okay,
but
okay,
we grew up on 8 mile.
Okay, so it's the same. That's a bad area.
We grew up in
town.
The same exact neighborhood as Eminem.
So what is it with, like, you know, there's you guys, there's Eminem, there's Kid Rock. I mean, those are three of the biggest rap groups, rap guys of our generation, all coming from the same area. What is it about this area that like makes like white guys want to rap?
I don't know.
You know, is it a I've rough area of town that. Or is it just something in the water or the beer or the chicks?
I think, you know, there's tons of white rappers, especially nowadays. But mm-hmm. I think with Detroit's always been like a gimmick based mm-hmm. rap. You know what I'm saying? Like us with the paint and like Eminem, you know, with talking about, you know, killing his wife.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know,
a little Slim Shady persona and
Kid Rock's gimmick being a redneck, you know, mm-hmm. it's more gimmick based in Detroit, at least at what, you know, because I mean, all three of us, you know, none of us are spring chickens. We've been around forever,
right.
You know,
since
in
the
Detroit
90s,
back in the day was very, very, very gimmick heavy mm-hmm. when it came to rap.
Interesting.
You know, very
you had a guy
heavy.
That was like on top and his name was Esham, and he used to come to the stage in a coffin and have a 666
right,
shirt.
He was supposedly satanic.
And he was supposedly like a devil worshiper. And everybody had like these outrageous, almost
personas,
like gimmicks.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, if you look at it too, Alice Cooper.
Yeah,
he comes
from the
here,
history of Detroit.
History.
Yeah.
Kiss's first big city was Detroit. Hello, right. Detroit Rock City.
Yeah,
Cobo Hall.
The gimmick, yeah.
Right? So I guess, and you know, Detroit is into that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it seems like it still was when we started out, you know what I mean? And we wanted to fit in too, you know what I mean? We just went, we're doing what.
And,
what
you know,
Detroit
and there was
doing.
Tons of people that never hit that, like, were super gimmick heavy too, you know? Mm-hmm. You know?
But let me be honest, you know, I would say. You know, as far as like that, the honest truth is like that, you know, like Alice Cooper and Kiss and the history of Detroit rock and everything, that had little to do with why we paint our face.
Mm-hmm.
Way more wrestling had to do with it.
Is that why? What inspired you to start painting your face?
Well, we just, the way we cut our interviews in the early days, they were promos.
Oh, straight up, yeah.
We were yelling. Yeah. You know, we're doing interviews.
Let me tell you something, motherfucker. You know, constantly pointing a finger. Right. You know.
And we just were in character. You know what I mean? Like straight up. Yeah,
we
that,
never
that
break kayfabe back
wrestling.
Then. I mean, now we do interviews. It's like we keep it as real as we can. But back then, it's like.
You guys are always playing the
we'd
characters.
We'd be in Europe and like we'd be talking about how we jacked the car to get there and f- the Spice Girls. You know, the craziness. Yeah. You know, just straight insanity.
And people are buying it.
Like, yeah.
It's crazy interviews talking about the end of the world and after the sixth Joker card comes out, you know, the world's going to burn and everything. And, you know, the internet came and ruined all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It just put us in a big, you know, glass. It made all the walls see through and everybody could see us, you know.
And we always looked at it, you know, we always looked at it like wrestling style. It's like back in the day. If you were to meet Hulk Hogan, you wanted to meet the Hulkster. You didn't want to meet Terry, you know.
Right.
You want him, how are you doing, brother?
Yeah,
you know,
you want
that, you know, hey, how you doing, guy?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't want that. That's how we would always be in stores, everything. We'd just be balls out, full and gimmick, you know.
It's almost like the luchador thing, you know, Mil Mascaris or Rey Mysterio.
Oh, yeah,
or
never
whatever.
They
never take
off,
the
right.
mask off. I mean, Mil Mascaris literally never took his mask off.
Right.
We were in Japan, he'd be riding on the bus with his mask on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, you can take it. No one sees my face, like ever. So, all right, whatever. It's 150 degrees. You want to wear a mask? Good for you. Good on you.
You probably got some good skin.
Yeah. But I mean, even with you guys today, at first it was like, you guys won't have your paint on. I was like, well, that's okay. Do we still take a picture? And it's like, well, you guys don't take pictures without your paint still,
we do take pictures without our paint, but not like anything publicity or anything official. You know, like if somebody catches you on the street, hey, take a picture.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know what I'm saying? But if we're doing something that's going to go on a website or Instagram or whatever.
Officially,
you
still want to be in
then
paint.
Then we'll always wear paint. Yeah.
But we used to get to the venues, jump off the bus, have masks. And we used to wear wrestling masks.
Lucha masks.
We'd wear the masks in the venue all day long. Before they opened doors, walking around while the crew's setting up the stage, we'd be wearing masks. You know,
and if we didn't do an interview in paint, we had a mask on. You know,
we really treated it as a different persona.
For the first 10 years, it was like that. You know, until all of a sudden shit started popping up on the internet, pictures of us at Wendy's eating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's the worst, right?
You know what I mean? And stuff like that. And it was heartbreaking.
Did you ever see someone taking pictures and like say, "Hey, give me that phone"?
Oh yeah.
Our guys used to grab phones and get in trouble.
Video cameras, everything. You know, smash video.
You'd smash them on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not us personally, but we'd have people to do it.
People do it, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, just imagine how Kiss must have felt in the 70s, you know, if someone took a picture. I mean, that's the end of your career back in those days. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody has a freaking phone. You know, we did a signing last week at a festival in Montreal. You know, you do a signing, and it's not a signing. It's a photo shoot because can I take a selfie? Can I take a selfie?
And then, hold on, blurry. It turns into a half-hour Civil War.
It's looking the other way. Yeah, the lighting's bad. Oh, there's a picture of my dog. What is it? And that's it. It's a shame a little bit because it does take away a little bit of the mystique of what we do as
performers.
Not a
little bit, a lot of it.
So then we just, we open the floodgates, and I wrote a book. Mm-hmm. And I just told all. And after that, it was over. You know what I mean? Like the mystique of who we are behind the paint.
Right. We didn't grow up in an industrial waste piping in Delray. You know, we actually grew up in homes. And
you had places to go, right? But that's kind of the whole the whole vibe of Insane Clown Posse. I mean, you guys have created this entire cottage industry. I mean, ICP... You're almost like Motorhead and the Ramones and Nirvana and Guns N' Roses. Even if you don't know those bands, you still will buy merch by those bands. You know, because there's so many teenage chicks wearing Motorhead shirts. No idea. Mm-hmm. So many ICP everywhere. I mean, I'm seeing your necklace there with the little guy running with the butcher knife, the cleaver.
Yeah.
You see that everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
Hatchet
Man. Sorry. Yeah, it's become like a part of pop culture here in America and probably around the world.
I see it like the Misfits. You always see Misfits merch.
Great point.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I compare us to the Misfits a lot. I think a lot of the people maybe, you know.
And they paint their faces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jerry wears it. Jerry will wear his face paint to the grocery store.
Little Jerry only.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're super, super blessed too. We're happy, you know. Mm-hmm. We even though it's not like it was in the 90s, you know, it was seemed to be a little bit more we were a little bit more in control of our image and everything in the 90s. You know, it's not like that anymore, but we're still very blessed to even be relevant. You know what I mean?
So what is it about ICP that's gone through the roof with the gimmick and the Hatchet Man and just the whole concept of Insane Clown Posse? Why do you think people have connected with you guys so well?
Because we've never had a one hit wonder radio hit or nothing. We've always been consistent. You know, mm-hmm. people don't buy our records to hear one song that was on the radio.
We don't have any hits.
You don't, right?
People buy our records to hear the record, not that one song they're familiar with. You know, and it's always been like that, and it always continued to be like that. You know, so it's like. You know, when we do a show, nobody's waiting for one specific song and then they leave after it or waiting, you know, we got to wait till the encore to do our big song or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like we got, you know, multiple songs that we do to get the crowd hyped.
That fans know all of them, but the mainstream knows none of them.
Right.
And who needs the mainstream?
Right.
This is probably where, you know, I might sound a little conceited, but I believe that our longevity is due to the fact that, you know, we work hard and we put out a good product.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that crazy ass product is, mm-hmm. we do it well. You know what I mean? We work hard. We come here to this office every day when we're not on the road. You know, like a 9-to-5 job every day. You know what I mean? Monday through Friday, we're here. We're thinking. We're working. you know, if we're, even if we're not in a studio recording, we're all powwowing, coming up with ideas, things, ways to stay relevant. You know what I mean? Promotional things, you know, merchandise. We're constantly trying to develop cool merchandise because we're fans of what we do. So we know what fans would like because we're fans as well, you know. And then we run our wrestling promotion and working on that and bringing that on tour. You know, is another reason for Juggalos to gather.
And Juggalos are your fans.
Yeah.
Which is a great name.
Yeah.
That's a great name.
They that just developed somehow. Right. You know?
How did that start?
We were never like, you're a Juggalo.
Oh, you know? he never came up with that?
No. It just happened.
And then somebody said it or something?
Another thing is, you know, we grew up together, you know, and we're not in a band with five people. I mean, you got to know how difficult that is.
Sure.
You know? Five different personalities clashing and stuff,
absolutely.
You know? So it's like we basically, like, we can finish each other's sentences and shit, you know? And we don't fall out, you know? We don't break up for a year, get back together, you know? And, you know, there's just not a group of people. It's us two in here, you know what I'm saying, making the record.
Yeah.
Of course, we got our, you know, a studio crew and stuff, but, you know, that rotates a lot.
But the
know?
Creativity comes from you two guys.
You know, and so we never have beef where, you know, where we're like, all right, well, this, we're done, you know.
Yeah,
and
we don't argue. We're best friends for real, you know, on and out of the paint, you know what I mean?
Which is so important after being together for 30 years.
Right. I've known him since I was 10 years old, you know what I'm saying? Maybe 9.
Yeah. Well, there's also your fan base is so loyal. I mean, I find that with wrestling fans, with heavy metal fans. I mean, you know, say even like Star Wars fans or something that's not quote unquote the cool thing. If you're an Insane Clown Posse fan, you've got this whole legion of fans that know something that the rest of the world doesn't know. You know, it's like a secret society of tens and hundreds of thousands of people, but it's our thing.
It's people that get it,
right?
You know,
WWE fans are the same because it's not a mainstream thing. As much as we try to make it be, it never has been. Heavy metal, it's never mainstream. If it is, it's just for cups of coffee and then it's gone again. So if you meet somebody else that's an ICP fan, it's like, hey, wow, this guy's cool. He likes the ICP.
You got something in common
right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you have that originality and that uniqueness there.
It just is either you like us and you understand us, or you fucking hate us.
Mm-hmm.
You rarely find anybody that's like, yeah, they're all right. I listen to them once in a while.
Yeah,
it's either
I can guarantee
balls deep,
it's polarizing.
Or I hate the got them guys.
Isn't that what you want, right?
I can guarantee you right now, you're going to get tons of hate just from having us on here. Oh, you know
but
I mean?
You even
no
say
doubt.
That the new record is The Marvelous Missing Link, and at the beginning of the record, I believe it's on this one, it's like, we're the world's most hated band.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, all right, you know, but we also have thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of fans that love that about us.
Yeah,
you know?
we're very fortunate because our fans are very supportive. There's not millions of them. Our records don't go platinum.
But
they
have,
to.
Though.
They're used to.
No one's record goes platinum.
There are
anymore.
Millions of them, but millions of them don't buy records.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? One kid will buy a record for their whole crew, and now people just like boot.
Well, now with
down,
Apple iTunes, you just go pay $10 a month, and you get everyone's record.
Right.
You know?
Right. Or you just send it to somebody, you know. People just file share or whatever. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But there's no telling really what
getting plaques like these nowadays is that's tough.
And you do have platinum discs on the wall, gold discs. I love that
platinum all over.
I love the Great Malenko.
Yeah,
which is a great one.
A lot of wrestling influences.
How did you come up with that name? I mean, obviously we know the Great Malenko, D. Malenko's dad.
It had nothing to do with that, though.
How did you get it?
Absolutely nothing to do with that. Dark Carnival was a crazy motherfucker, man.
Yeah, unless it was something subliminal. You know, when we got to WCW. And we met Dean Malenko, you know, he said he was mad about that.
Was he?
Yeah.
He really?
Was like, that's an insult to my dad. And we were like,
you're kidding me.
You know, he was. Yeah.
Wow.
He didn't like us. You know what I mean? But we, you know, we knew who Dean Malenko was. But, you know, when we came up with the Great Malenko, you know, it's hard to believe. But I don't think we subconsciously knew about Boris the Great Malenko.
Right.
Not at all.
So is it like, is this your Great Malenko is like a magician or something? Or just
he's an illusionist.
Gotcha.
But we just, the name, you know, the Great Malenko came into our heads as the name of the fourth Joker's card. And later we learned of Boris the Great Malenko.
Right, and we're like, oh, shit.
So what did Dean say? Did he come up to you guys, or what happened?
He was like, that's an insult to my dad. And we were like, honestly, we had no idea, you know? We knew who you were, you know? We didn't know, you know? And he was like, bullshit.
Really?
And walked away, yeah.
Hmm.
You know, we had a lot of weird things happen when we got into WCW.
What else happened?
Well, Mick Foley, you know, who's a good friend of ours now, you know, he was on the Stranglemania video wrestling Terry Funk and,
okay.
and wrestling
that was
others.
In WWF.
Yeah, when we got to WWF and he came up to us and he was like, "Don't you think you guys owe me some money?" You know, and he
but
was
he
serious.
Yeah.
He was serious.
He was serious.
Oh wow.
And he was like, you know, because he's all over the Stranglemania video.
Him and Terry Funk are like, because
they had that death match tournament over
there.
Yeah,
that's what it was. That's what the video was.
And we called him Cactus Sack.
That was his name in it. Yeah.
And then Drunk Terry Flunk.
And so we broke him off some money right then and
there. Did you really?
Right on the spot. We're like, here you go. And he loved us. That was
and then we were cool after that.
Like, super cool. Yeah. Same thing with Terry Funk. You know, we actually. After, like, we paid Terry Funk for it, he didn't even ask us. We were like, we got to pay Terry Funk now, you know? And we were with Sabu. We were actually on the road. Sabu was on the road with us doing a concert tour. And we were in Texas, and he called Terry Funk. And we actually went to the Double Cross Ranch and chilled out and, like, hung out with Terry Funk and his wife.
His wife made
cornbread and
chili.
That's cool.
And we got to hang out on his, like, acres and stuff, hung out in his milk barn. I don't smoke weed, but that night I was like, man, we're smoking with Terry Funk. And
Terry Funk offers you a joint, you take one. I did had Lemmy on my show last year, and he offered me a cigarette. I haven't smoked in probably 25 years, but when Lemmy offers you a cigarette, you smoke a cigarette. I smoke a cigarette with Lemmy. Try not to cough in his face, right? But I mean, that shows the respect that you guys have that you paid. Because
Terry Funk didn't want the money, though. He was like, no, I don't even get it. But we just kind of
slipped it into a cookie jar or something.
Yeah, it was like some kind of like empty like pot like flour, like some kind of pot or cookie jar. Yeah, or something.
Yeah. And then when we were saying goodbye, we're hugging each other. We're saying goodbye. We're leaving, and we said, "Oh yeah, check the cookie pot," you know.
And then see ya.
Yeah, and then we left, you know.
But I mean, it's not really like you really owed the money anyways. It's not like it's their, I guess it's their match, but they didn't own, if anything, you owed like FMW guys money.
Right. Well, they never came after us.
Right.
So that's
but I mean, thing. That does show a lot of respect on your part, though.
Yeah, you know, especially we didn't want to, you know, we were making money off the video, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it was doing really, it's still a classic to our fans.
That's
where
we came out with a part two, you know?
Yeah, we came out with we definitely.
So what other things happened that were kind of weird for you?
Oh, man, we got so many adventures from being in wrestling.
Adventures.
You know? Yeah.
What were the differences between, like, WCW and WWF?
Oh, man.
Huge difference.
Oh, man. WWF, we got no respect in the locker room.
Really?
No respect. I mean, we did from a couple of the boys, whatever, you know what I'm saying? But, like, because they didn't know our background, they just thought we were some rappers in there just wrestling where everybody else had been busting ass their whole life to be wrestlers.
We didn't earn our way into WWE.
Right, exactly.
You
right. We didn't,
I mean?
We didn't pay our wrestling
music.
Dues.
Gotcha.
We didn't pay the wrestling dues to be in there. So, yeah. So, I mean, every match we had with the Headbangers, I mean, it was just the most stiffest matches you could
They beat
match.
Our ass.
Like, it was beyond stiff.
Did you know it when you're in there? Like,
no question.
Then we had a spot where they were on top of us, and we were supposed to flip them. We were in the aisle way fighting, and we were supposed to flip them over.
Turn the tide.
Simultaneously. And then we would both be on top of them, pounding them. Time to flip them, they weren't budging. You know what I'm saying?
So we're both swinging on each other.
And then you know, we'd be in our dressing room, you know.
This is really why people didn't like us, because we needed a mirror for our paint.
Uh-huh.
So, like, they'd always give us our own dressing room.
Oh, right.
And you know how that is. Yeah. Oh, the big shots got their own dressing room. You don't want to dress with the boys, you know?
Exactly. And the first day our very first day at SummerSlam, we needed a mirror, right? So they put us in a dressing room with Steve Austin and Undertaker going over the finish. It was us two painting up, and right behind us on a bench is Undertaker and Austin going over their match.
That's the Highway to Hell famous main event match between the two of them.
And we're sitting in there painting up like, oh, sorry.
Did they look at you at all or what you were doing in there?
No, they didn't also.
They weren't. It wasn't too bad in WWE, but you know, we didn't know. you know,
we didn't know the ins and outs of the locker room in the big time
until
we got to like WCW and then seeing how fucked up it was in WWF, you know.
For us, right?
Yeah. For us, yeah.
So, exactly. So WCW was a little better.
It was way better. They treated us like
with
we
open
were,
arms,
you know,
yeah.
like we Welcome were open arms. One of the boys.
We had proved ourselves. We were in, you know, we were already in WWF
and what did you guys do in WCW?
We first we are in a crew called the Deadpool with Raven and Vampiro.
I got to use the restroom right quick.
All right.
And then yeah, the Deadpool and
with Raven and Vampiro.
Yeah, then we actually got to be in a crew after Raven left. It was Vampiro, the Great Muda, and me
oh,
and
that's
Shaggy.
Cool.
That was beyond.
I mean,
cool.
Muda, yeah.
I got Muda's mist in my face.
Nice.
he went to miss somebody and they ducked and I caught it in the face, you know, and I was like, yes. You know? And then yeah, we actually went to WCW twice. We did like a 2 or 3 month run, then we left. We quit. Something happened. Yeah, we quit, and then I remember that Misfits kind of took our place.
Yeah, because they were there for a while too, right?
And they were with Vampiro. Then we came back to WCW, and this is when Vince Russo was there, and we did a second run in WCW. We had a blast in WCW. The first day we were there, though, I did a moonsault, and when we came back, Hugh Morris kicked over a garbage can and was screaming and bitching, you know. And Eric,
that's his move, right?
Yeah, Eric Bischoff came in and was like, "Don't do the moonsalt again," you know. He's the only big man that does.
You're
the
right,
moonsault.
Big guy doing a moonsault,
and I was like, "I'm so sorry, man," you know, and I apologized to him and everything. We just didn't know
the politics.
Kind of things. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of politics in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't know if you just kind of came in there.
Yeah, especially in WWE. We didn't know to shake everybody's hand and everything, you know what I mean? And we just, you know, we f***ed up in WWE.
It's almost like you need like a rule book to understand what the, you know, the protocol is inside the dressing room. You said like shaking everybody's hand. It's such a ridiculous thing, but if you don't do it...
When you get there and when you leave.
Right, exactly. Even if you see somebody, like, see him at the gym, hey.
Right.
See him later on the day in the dressing room, how's it going? See him later on at night at the restaurant, how's it going? It's like, come on, dude, how many times I have to shake your hand? You know, but at first, especially in the 90s, that was so, like, if you didn't do it, it's the cardinal sin.
And the ginger wrestling shake.
Which I
Not
never
Not the
understood.
Actual shake, the ginger
that,
handshake.
You know, my dad taught me.
Our division, we do JCW, we forbid the ginger handshake.
Yeah.
Everybody shakes hands
right.
like a
my
man.
My dad taught me to shake hands like a man. I never bought that thing with the little kind of wimpy little handshake.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So, yeah, you guys have your own company, the Juggalo Championship Wrestling, and you've been doing this for a long time as well. Do you run shows a lot, or is this just based around the gathering of the Juggalos?
No, we run shows. We go on tour. We try to go on tour every year, one time, you know, a tour with JCW, and we run, on a regular basis, we run Christmas, Halloween, and the Gathering, and that's every year. And then when we're home recording and we're going to be home for a while, we run monthly shows here in Detroit.
And then sometimes when we go on the road, we'll take it with us just for like early in the day, you know what I'm saying, for some, you know, just for, because people like, you know, tailgating shit before the show and stuff, you know. So, you know, we'll have wrestling beforehand, like outside in the parking lot, whatever, you know what I'm saying.
So how is it being on the other side? How is it being a promoter?
It's cool.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, we
see, I don't do so much of that. Him and Kevin Gill do it. I commentate now.
Okay.
Which I love.
We're very story driven, you know.
Okay.
We like to do stories even if we're not filming and nobody knows the storylines, even if it's just for our own entertainment, we're very much into stories, you know, like the characters development and you know. And I always said if I wasn't doing this for a living, doing ICB for a living, I would love to be a writer for WWE.
A writer, right. Yeah. But I'm talking about the actual promoter, like, you know, paying the guys. You got to deal with all the different guys. Is everyone pretty cool when they come work for you? Do you ever get any guys that are kind of
you guys are
known as good promoters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
people we love take us, care of our guys.
It's yeah, all, we make sure we pay them, you know, cool. Especially right. Like the indie guys who aren't used to getting paid. We actually make sure they get paid.
There's always food and drinks right. In the dressing
right.
Room.
Right, buy beer like, and catering
know,
and all that.
You guys are bringing your rock and roll backstage knowledge to the wrestling world.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which we never have in wrestling.
Right, right.
People always go, can I come backstage? Like, there's really, there's nothing to look at. There's no backstage pass.
We don't have any. We don't have any chairs. We use a barricade around the ring, so it's standing room only, like a concert.
Okay.
You know? And we use the ring music and everything. It's really loud.
We got a live DJ on stage doing the ring music and everything.
Yeah, you know, we have a DJ on stage, and we always have a production.
We got the lights and we got a ramp and all.
Another
that,
thing
you know?
From rock and roll. Yeah. So who do you use like in the main events? You bring in like
some of the guys we use.
Usually our guys in the main events, like the undercard, we'll bring people in, and once in a while we'll bring somebody in to like for.
We've brought everybody.
But yeah, we have brought it, especially one gathering. It was just like a legend dream. It was
right. You've
like,
had a lot of guys there.
Oh my god.
Let's talk quickly about the gathering. Now the gathering is kind of like your version of Lollapalooza.
Yeah,
for example,
it's a festival, a 4-day festival,
and then
every year.
And for JCW, it's like our WrestleMania. We call it Bloody Mania.
So what do you have at the... First of all, how did you get the idea to do the Gathering of the Juggalos? Because I've heard about this for years and years and years.
Yeah, we just had our 16th.
Wow, 16.
Just passed, yeah.
You guys did Woodstock 99, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So just as a quick little segue, how was that, first of all?
It was awesome.
Greatest shit ever, man.
Really?
Come on, picture doing Woodstock.
Yeah.
You know,
no kidding, right?
You know?
We're very, very underground. And I remember we had these scooters we were riding around at Woodstock. And I remember we went around the corner, and there was like a gate, and behind the gate was like press.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember all the cameras going off, you know. And we're not used to that, you know what I mean? We were just like, it was like paparazzi.
It was surreal, man.
Snapping pictures of us, yeah. You know, and it was just like, we haven't seen anything like that since we went to the Billboard Music Awards and walked the red carpet there.
Oh, that was great. That was so great. Like, you know, everybody gets out, everybody's cheering and stuff. We get out our limo. Boo!
But
we loved it. We fed off it. We're like, yeah.
You guys, if you guys have to be the heels, you'll be the
super.
Heels.
Yeah, right. That. That's
as
what
long
it
as
is.
They're making noise, right?
Right.
So who was headlining Woodstock that year? Do you remember? Or some of the bands?
It was Kid Rock, Limp Bizkit.
Kid Rock wasn't. No, that was before he was super huge. That was 99. That's when he was just.
Yeah, you're right. He was just getting started.
It was, I think, Korn headlined one night.
Korn, Limp Bizkit. Limp Bizkit was like on top of the
so
world.
So it was a heavier style of a lineup for that Woodstock.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, we went on right after the Roots.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a good relationship with a lot of those other bands? Are they fans? Are they friends? Are you talking about Bizkit or are you talking about Kid Rock? Or
we're not friends with Kid Rock. Mm-hmm. We're friends with Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, we're friends with a lot of
Limp
lot
Bizkit
of bands.
Was on our Fred Durst was on our last album as a guest. He did a guest.
And we were supposed to do a tour together. You know,
of course.
It ended up like falling.
It's the
through,
typical
but...
band guys. Hey, let's tour together, man.
Right. Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
go on tour. Yeah, let's do it. Have a couple drinks, and then of course booking agents and managers and everyone else gets involved. But how was your reaction at Woodstock? I mean, you're talking about, you know, 200,000 people.
To our surprise, awesome. It was great.
Nice.
People as far as you could see.
People were singing the lyrics that we couldn't believe it.
Wow.
We were like, holy
Your
shit,
Your loyal
man.
Fans turned up.
And it's crazy. It's, you could see the sound wave of your voice. You'd be like, put your middle fingers in the air. And you could, as the sound traveled, you could see people doing it.
Waves of fingers,
you know,
going
so
up
like,
at different
yeah,
times.
So like the beginning was
like
starting.
Started at the front. And
so you could see
them all,
like the sound of speed.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was crazy,
that
man.
That is really cool. Yeah. So did that kind of maybe influence you guys? We want to do our own festival every year? Or was that
because that was the first year we had already been playing our festival. Because that was in 99. Mm-hmm. The first gathering was in 99.
Okay.
So we had been planning to do ours, you know, since I think 98, because we put like a we put I don't remember exactly how we worded
some
or whatever.
Some cryptic message in our
in our CD booklet saying, you know, something big's coming, you know, we'll announce it once, you know, it's near, you know. And then once it came near, we announced it's going to be, you know, and we didn't call it a festival then, you know, because we didn't think it'd turn into what it did today. You know, it was at a convention center here in Novi.
Okay.
And we're just like, you know, the gathering of the Juggalos, come peep it out. We're going to have, you know, shows. We're going to have wrestling. We're going to have contests, all this and that.
All the bands that are like Juggalo orientated, you know what I mean?
Bands on your record label.
All the bands on our label. And we had like all of our stage sets throughout the years set up so that people could go stand on the stage
and take pictures,
you know. And we had all our stages set up, and we had like, there was all kind of things to do, you know, at the first one. And now there's like, it's like so it's much
24
to do.
Hours nonstop.
You'd have to split into four
so
different
much
people
stuff to go.
To do it all.
It's like Disneyland. I mean? You got to pick which ones you want to do and worry about the
things. You
can't
figure
out
do it
what
all. Event you want to go see.
Which are some of the highlights from that? Because I know you've had big wrestling guys there, wrestlers there.
We've had as far as you can go with wrestling, you know what I mean? We've had
everybody shy of Hogan. He's the only one that wouldn't.
And
do
we
it.
Tried hard for Hogan.
DJ,
we've had Flair not wrestling, but as a host on stage.
How was that?
He left because they threw shit at him.
Yeah, he got hit.
Really?
But he was really professional. He's like, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I got to leave. You know, usually people get pissed
off.
Why
were people throwing stuff?
Because people
crazy.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
Bad apples in the bunch.
Didn't Tila Tequila get hit with a
real bad?
Yeah, fucked up,
She misspelled Juggalos or something on Twitter.
But she egged it on, though. You know what I'm saying? She stayed up there and was talking shit and just, you know, snowball got worse and worse, you know.
So you mentioned Flair. Who else have you had? Because you're talking about when you do your shows, you use local guys. But for the gathering of the Juggalos, it's a big thing. Like every year, someone I know will be there doing something.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, you know? Like we had a legend show one year. I can't even begin to name them all.
There's no way anybody's ever had a bigger legend show, even at a convention, than we had at that.
I have never heard of a bigger legend show than we had. Our legend show was so big that there was only two singles matches on the card because there was so many guys that needed to be placed in a match that we had a battle royal. We had like a Royal Rumble thing. We had
we take it back to like Greg the Hammer versus Tito Santana dog collar match. You know?
So they actually show up and do that?
Oh, no, we had a steel cage. Greg the Hammer versus Tito Santana.
Yeah,
we had oh my god, we had Austin Idol. We had Funk, Piper, Mick Foley doing commentary.
Hall and Nash, I think.
Hall and Nash, Hall and Nash. Yeah.
Sean Walton, you know.
Sean Waltman.
How was Piper for you guys?
He's cool. He's worked with us a couple times.
Yeah.
He came and did comedy.
Good guy, man. I mean? Yeah, that's a drag when he passed away.
Yeah, that sucks real bad.
It seems like Gathering the Juggalos would be, like, he would love an atmosphere like that. Just do whatever you want. No censor.
He had a good time.
No rules.
They loved him there. They loved him. They treated him real good, you know. We had a thing called flashlight wrestling, which is where it would go on at, like, 2 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
And the only light on the ring would be flashlights.
We give everybody flashlights.
Okay.
So everybody would just be showing.
Interesting.
Flashlights. So we had like a flashlight in each corner. You know?
We had the Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express in a flashlight match, you know? And they're like, in all my life, I've never seen anything like this. You know what I mean? And it gave this really cool illusion that they were like in a stadium because of all the little lights all around them, you know, in the dark shining on them. It just looked like, I don't know what it looked like. It was just the most unusual.
And do your fans react to the matches? They're into it?
Yeah. Not everybody has to go to wrestling. You can go see other stages. So the only ones that are there are wrestling
You know, you got
fans.
Your super smart marks that are there, too.
Of course.
We had Jimmy Snuka. The streamers. Jimmy Snuka, Jake the Snake.
You pretty much name it. We've had.
You guys are just like bringing in all of your heroes.
Exactly.
It's exactly.
And that's
right.
Like how we do like with the main stage. Like in the past years, like everybody we'd always want to see, we'd bring into the gathering.
As far as bands as well,
bands and rappers, you
like
know,
who?
Ice Cube. Ice Cube was
the
one
Ghetto
of the
Boys.
Yeah, Ghetto Boy. Ghetto Boys reunited to come in.
So this has a big reputation. If Ice Cube is going to show up to rap,
we got Busta Rhymes.
He's been there twice.
George Clinton, Parliament, pretty much, you know what
I'm
saying? Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, we've had so many people.
See, that's the cool thing about when you get to a certain level. That's why I love doing this show. I get to go talk to people that I've never met that I always wanted to, like you guys, or go talk to my heroes. Like I had Paul Stanley on the show twice. You know, that gives me a chance to go and like, oh, who do I want to get? Like William Shatner. Let's try and get William Shatner. Shatner will do it. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Go sit
across. You're not pigeonholed to just wrestling.
Just do whatever I want. Right. Anybody I think is interesting, let's talk.
Right.
And same as you guys. You put on this massive festival that's got a reputation. You can bring in whoever you want because you want to see him.
We do comedians. You know, we do comedians as well. You know what I'm saying? We've had slew of comedians and man, what else? We just so much shit.
You know, there's not a lot of bands that are similar to Insane Clown Posse, so it's hard to fill four nights worth of bands that we think juggalos would want to see.
Do you guys play every night or just the last night?
Just the last
night. Well, we'll do Dark Lotus, which is a super group that we have with Twisted and Blaze,
another group we do.
A group called the Psychopathic
Riders.
Which is
the Riders, Psychopathic Riders.
And then the last night we'll do we'll do our set, and then we'll do a set called the Deadly Medley, which is everybody on Psychopath that goes out, does a couple songs, you know.
Nice.
So, the craziest part about it is, no sponsors. It's all us. You know what I'm saying? We don't have no Budweiser, no Red Bull, no Pepsi, nobody. You know what I'm saying? It's just
that's
us.
Really, really amazing.
And we lose our ass every year.
Do you really?
We didn't lose our ass
year. Last year, we lost some, but we didn't actually lose our ass this year. You know what I'm saying? We still got our
almost
underwear.
Breaking
we
even.
Got our underwear on this year.
We made a little bit of money this year.
Oh, you made money this year. Yes. How many people are showing up for it?
We get around 10,000.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, we just switched locations last year. So last year it was decent, it was nice. But this year it was a lot more than last year. I mean, I still haven't heard the final count, but
because it's not easy. Like Metallica had their own festival 2 years in a row. They called it Orion.
They
lost so much money. It's like we're done. We're not doing it anymore.
Lost money.
Oh yeah, the first one was in Atlantic City, and the second was Detroit. It takes time to build it, but I think they're like, we're not doing this anymore. So for you guys to be building it to where you're actually making, even if it's $3, to be breaking
about what it was,
breaking even, that's $1.50 each. That's a huge deal.
It is a tradition now. It's like we can't stop doing it if we wanted to stop doing it. We don't want to stop doing it, but if we did, we can't. You know what I'm saying? Gives the juggalos, it's just giving back to the juggalos.
It's a part of your brand.
It's so awesome for juggalos from all over the world be able to come in one spot, not be judged by nobody. Everybody's friends, even if they don't know each other. Mm. There's never no fight.
It's not easy for juggalos. It's not easy to be a fan of ICP. Fights. Everybody hates ICP. So people walk around wearing, the Hatchet Man. Other people are like, you listen to those assholes, Why? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not easy. But when they come together and they're in a place like The Gathering, there's like an euphoria of awesome.
Everybody's
going
cool
on. It's in the air.
You say there's no fights in the crowd because everyone's in the same way.
Last year, there was one fight. One person got stabbed, but that was between two food vendors.
Oh.
Yeah.
Straight up.
That's an asterisk.
Right.
That doesn't count.
Exactly. It was between two food vendors battling for business.
But you guys, I mean, just listening to a couple of tunes today and on Malenko and on the new record as well, you guys you have a pretty positive message running through there that I hear. You know what I mean? There is that sentiment.
We touch on it sometimes.
Right. It's a positivity. It's almost a spiritual element to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I mean, that's pretty cool. You know what I mean?
It's in there. You know, it's in some records. It's the underlying basis of who we are. It's when we're speaking to juggalos, that's what we want to say. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When we're speaking to the people that have been with us for years, that's definitely what we want to say.
Right.
Is we want them to, I don't know how to put it because we're not holy rollers.
I'm not saying that, but there's a positive element. Even when you were just talking about how there's a big family, it's not easy to be a Juggalo fan, but when there's 10,000 of them gathered, there's no fights.
Right.
That's a positive vibe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, people are coming
super
to.
Super positive.
You know, that I think that's a pretty.
People have called us, like, even Christian rappers before because had a song called Miracles that came out and, got, millions of hits on YouTube, and all of a sudden, people are like, oh, are they a Christian group? Mm. We're just like, we're the furthest thing from a Christian group you could possibly be. We got a kick out of it, you know what I'm saying? But
we believe in God.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And we make it apparent, but, you know,
but
we don't
make gospel music.
No, yeah, right. It's not like this is Striper or preach,
whatever. Right, exactly.
We're not preaching. But I was just saying there was some elements of positivity on there, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a great story as we start to wind down here. Like I said, reading the Wikipedia for you got to tell me this Sharon Osbourne story.
Oh God.
I mean, that's a great story.
Yeah, that bitch stole us this morning.
Yeah, she does.
so let me set the tone. So you guys had a band that was on tour with you that wasn't working out.
Cold Chamber,
who just played last week on the festival we were on. That got a great reaction then, but with you guys, your fans weren't buying it, right? So, and they were managed by Sharon
Osbourne. So we got to this, we were paying them a lot of money every night, you know, but they weren't drawing anybody. Not saying Cold Chamber can't draw people.
No, no.
They just weren't drawing people to our show.
To your show, right. They've got a huge fan base on their own.
Right. So we were paying them a lot of money, and by the second show, we were realizing they're not
bringing in their money's worth of people.
Right.
So we said, this isn't working out, you know. And so then we went and did an appearance on Howard Stern, which we do a lot of appearances on.
And that's hard to get on Howard.
Yeah, we used to be on there a lot.
He's our boy.
We haven't been on there for a while, but we used to be on there a lot.
He gets what you guys are doing.
Right.
He digs
it. And then, you know, he always does like his thing, you know, bringing people in so we could, you know what I'm saying?
Mess with them or whatever.
Right. Because he knows that we get hot quick over some shit. You know? It makes for good radio.
For sure. Right.
Sharon Osbourne called when we were on the Howard Stern show. She was like, you know, how dare you throw my band Cold Chamber off? You guys are, you know, you guys aren't even going to be around next year, you know? And we were like you, you know?
You
know? She was like, what? You know what I'll do to you in this industry? Do you
really?
Know? Yeah.
We're like, what can you do to us?
Right. You're going to throw us off MTV? We're not on MTV.
You're going to throw us off the
radio? We're not on the radio.
You're going to kick us off the Gathering of the Juggalos? It's our show.
Yeah, you better suck my dick or something, you know, with all that.
So she called up and she's giving you attitude about it.
Yeah.
Right.
And then so we went off and she was like, I'm going to, you know, I'm on my way down there. You know, I'm on my way to New York. I'm going to, something like that. So Howard asked us to come back the next morning and she came on a show the next morning.
Wow.
And we had like a face off, you know, and it was the same thing. We were battling.
Yeah,
she's
going off in a crumpet voice. You know what I'm saying? You could barely understand her.
How dare you throw my bottle?
Right? We're just like, shut the up, you know what I'm saying?
We're going off on Ozzy, even though we don't have nothing against Ozzy.
Dope fiend to stick a stick in his back and prop him up on stage so you can get paid, bitch.
So what was the bet that she made you, though?
And she actually got so pissed off, she threw her glasses at us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like the old math teacher getting mad at you.
It. One of us like just took, I don't remember who it was, but one of us just put them on.
She said, you guys' next album won't even sell 50,000 copies, you know?
Okay.
And we said, we'll bet you right now $50,000 it will, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she said, all right, it's a bet. You know, this is live on the air, you know? And
we were like, matter of fact, we don't even want the money. We'll donate it to charity.
Right.
We don't want your money in our pocket.
We want you to donate the money
to a charity of our choice.
Charity. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's $50,000 if you guys sell 50,000 albums.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then our next album went gold. You know what I mean?
All you heard was.
Now, when we go on Howard Stern,
crickets.
We bring it up every time. We're like, have you talked to Sharon about our money? You know what I mean? And then he's just like kind of blows it off. You know what I mean?
Oh, so she never paid you.
She never paid us, you know, which is, you know, she's the one that made the bet.
Right.
She's the one that thought it up.
And had you not sold the records, you know she'd be tracking you guys down to get that money, right?
No question. She'd probably have her lawyers on it.
Yeah, but, you know, she was, as you know, she's powerful in the music industry.
She's intimidating
you know?
And powerful, yeah.
But we take such underground roads, she couldn't affect us in any way.
Well, that's the thing. When you guys do everything on your own, who can affect you?
Right.
What's she going to do? Blackball you, like you said, from MTV and the radio and from all record companies.
Right.
We got our own record company.
We do everything ourselves.
We're all in-house. Merchandise, everything, right?
We don't open for anybody. We've never toured, opened for anybody. We've always headlined our own tours. We've never gone on tour and opened except for way back in the early days. And, you know, there's nothing she could do. And so many bands throughout the years, so many bands have been like, thank you for saying that. We wish we could say that to her. Oh, you know,
so
it was
much.
So cool.
You're
to
one
you
of the
guys
you're one of the few bands that can because you're on. You're like you said, self-contained. You know,
and we're very fortunate because we put out a greatest hits. Even though we don't have any hits, we put out a best of compilation about 5 or 6 years ago with a major label, and just doing that sucked. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it was, we were arguing and battling, and
we actually came out with a record back in the day called "Our Greatest Misses."
Right,
you know, and we put in just working with another label to do that was a nightmare. You know what I mean?
Just having to compromise in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, we just don't want to ever work with anybody. Nobody understands what we're about.
No A&Rs, none of the presidents. They don't know how to market us. They don't know how to put us out. They don't know, you know.
Right.
They have no idea that the formula they use for like radio hits and, you know, mainstream bands don't work for us.
But there's some really catchy stuff like on the new record. When I was listening to "Okay" or "Get Clowned." I mean, that's really kind of mainstream hooks and beats and everything. I mean, there's obviously some cursing on there and stuff, but the hook is great.
Thanks.
The beat is great too.
Thanks.
So that's why I like the fact that this probably could be on the radio, whatever that means nowadays, which is probably almost nothing. Anyways, I'll tell you from a rock and roll standpoint, being on the radio is basically just to say we're on the radio. Does it really mean anything to album sales? Not really. Not in this day and age.
Plus, if you
go
up,
how much you get played.
Well, yeah, exactly. How much money you're paying to get played, too.
If you go up, you got to go back down.
Yeah.
Right. And we've always been right under the radar.
Right.
And it's good like that, you know, because we control our own destiny. Like, we don't have to pray that, you know, hopefully radio will play our new single off our new album or we're through.
Mm-hmm. Or a second single, you know, after our first hot one, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't
have to worry about
it. Our albums are going to do as well as we're going to work them,
mm-hmm.
you know, as we're going to stay out on the road and keep working them, you know.
Are you guys getting ready to go on the road for the tour of this?
We're going out in October and in November.
How long are your tours? For a couple months?
Yeah.
Do you ever go overseas or just mostly in the States?
Yeah, yeah. We just got back from Australia
that was almost 2 years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, Christmas. It'll be 2 years.
Wow, damn.
Yeah, it goes by quick, man.
But I think, was it Christmas of 2013?
It was right before Christmas. Yeah,
2013.
That's 2 years ago. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We were over there too. We did Steel Panther.
We ain't been to Europe in a grip, man. But Australia.
We've been to Europe a bunch of times.
But before that,
we haven't
it'd been
there
like
in 10
years before we went to Australia. You know what I'm saying? And we came back. Everybody's like, ah. You know?
So when you do a tour of the States, what kind of venues are you playing?
Small ones, like 2,000.
Like House of Blues type things?
Yeah, it varies. You know what I'm saying? Some markets will actually do like 700. And the other markets would do like 5,000.
But that's
good, man.
And then
other markets would do like 1,000. Other markets,
if you can draw an average of 2,000 or whatever it is, that's good business nowadays, you know, which is great.
We're happy with it. It's always been the same. You know, we've always drawn the same amount. It's never been a point where we drew more than we're drawing now.
Right.
We consider that fortunate, you know?
And to us, it's cool because every show is still intimate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you could still see everybody.
We can
still
reach everybody with the Faygo, you know, that we throw off the stage.
That's the soda that you spray people with.
Yeah. And we can make sure that, you know, to bombard everybody in the house. And if it was any bigger, it doesn't feel the same, you know.
Right, we've done arenas, and it's just not the same feel.
Do you have like a little cannon for the Faygo, or you just shoot it right out of the bottle?
We bring different things. We have
our biggest cannon is our finger.
Hell, over the top of the bottle.
If you open a warm 2 liter of Faygo, stick your finger in the opening and hold it upside down.
Shake it up.
It'll start to gain pressure.
Yeah,
especially if it's warm.
I can make a field goal from 100 yards with a
Now explain what Faygo is.
It's a Detroit soda.
Detroit soda.
It's real cheap.
Like every city has their cheap. Cheap. We call it pop here.
Yeah, in Canada too, pop.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's a northern
thing. Every city has their cheap pop, you know, and we grew up drinking Faygo just like pretty much everybody in Michigan, you know.
There's like, you know, 25 flavors of Faygo.
So you guys are getting cheap pops on stage and cheap pops in the ring.
That's right.
Nicely played.
Final couple questions. What's your favorite song that you play live for you, Violent J? Is there one that sticks out?
I like doing Night of the Chainsaw, which is one of our newer songs. I like doing it. It's a fun song to do live.
People get into it?
Yeah.
How about you, Shaggy?
You know, it's so hard because, like, to pick one, because, like,
Like you said, you don't have the big hit.
Right. But you know, it was the last tour we went on, a tour before, we did a song that we never did on tour before called Fat Sweaty Betty.
Mm-hmm.
And for some, I just loved doing that song. Every night we did it, I loved it. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of like a challenge doing it, you know, like keeping the breath right and all that. But like, and it didn't even really get over that well with the crowd, you know what I'm saying? But like, I just really fucking loved doing that.
It's a real rarity.
Yeah. You know? Some songs are just fun to sing, whether the crowd really goes nuts or not. As a singer, it's fun just to do it.
I love singing.
You know,
We're rappers, but some of our songs have some
straight up singing.
And I love singing. I love grabbing the mic. I use a mic stand.
Oh, nice.
You know what I mean? And I love singing.
What's your singing voice like?
Well, you know, I kind of, favorite singer is Eddie Vedder.
It depends upon how long in the tour.
Of course. Right. How many days in a row you've done. All right, last question. What's your favorite match that you ever had?
Favorite match?
That you ever had, yeah.
Man, that's a tough one.
This is the one that stands out that you had?
Yeah, yeah. My favorite match would be, it was us and Terry Funk versus Jerry the King Lawler and Monty Brown.
Oh, in TNA?
Yeah, no, this isn't in TNA. Oh. We did TNA.
Yeah, right.
But this was at the Gathering.
Okay.
Jerry King Lawler, Monty Brown, and I don't remember who the other guy was, the third guy. But it was a great six-man tag. Teaming with Terry Funk was awesome.
That's crazy.
I remember teaming with Terry Funk, but I don't remember the actual match. Yeah.
How about you, Shaggy? You got one that stands up for
you? You know, I think one of our old school matches, Wrestling for Malcolm, like a match me versus him. You know what I'm saying? We had this gimmick worked out where like...
Is this Corporal Darryl Daniels?
No, this was Hector Hatchett versus Sewer Dweller. And and I got powerbombed like three times in a row. And then all of a sudden he grabbed the ref and started powerbombing him like three times in a row. You know what I'm saying? The old school one. I mean, every match. I mean, of course, you got your match. Some matches that are the shits. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
But
just like you have some shows that are the shits.
One of the matches I really liked was it was a singles match, me versus Lenny. For the cruiserweight,
Lenny Lane.
I think that was a good one. That between that and then I can't remember that
for the cruiserweight title. They had a great.
That's
what
cool.
was what,
actually
what was
on
that? What
TV.
Was that,
yeah, in WCW.
Yeah, what was that? What was that division out in LA we used to do with Vamp?
Oh, XPW.
Yeah, XPW. It was me and Vamp versus two luchadors that didn't speak English.
It was Halloween and
Halloween and Damien 666. Yeah, so basically, I'm just getting thrown around like a rag doll. You know what I'm saying? Just I knew what they're gonna do. You know, Vamp was like interpreting or whatever.
Yeah,
what I'm saying. But it was a pretty cool match. I like that.
Well, dudes, it's great talking to you, man. Much respect for all you've created, and like I said, it's really cool to finally get to meet you face to face after
with
all
you,
these
man.
Years.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah,
on
no
the
doubt,
show,
man.
It's
no
a
doubt.
Blast, man. And I'll have to come to a gathering one day and come check you guys out.
Yeah, man. We'd love to have your band. That'd be awesome.
That would be killer. That'd be fun. We'd have a good mix.
Band and work a match.
Well, we could do both. Yeah, absolutely, man. Killer guys.
We'll put you over.
Oh, well, I wouldn't have it any other way. You kidding me? A prima donna over here. Thanks to Insane Clown Posse, Shaggy, Too Dope, and Violent J. Had a tremendous time hanging out with the boys at the Lotus Pod, their studio and headquarters outside Detroit. They had their makeup on, they had the face paint on and everything. They were ready for battle. Great new album, The Marvelous Missing Link, the Outtakes album, dropping on October 2nd. You can also get The Missing Link Lost and The Missing Link Found albums. They got a little bit of a connection there, a little bit of a concept album. Both of them were released this year. All are available at iTunes and on Amazon. And hey, if you get them on Amazon, please use the Talk is Jericho links to do it. You can support EICP and TIJ at the same time. Just go to Podcast One, click on the Support Our Show Sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All my Amazon links are right there. Once again, pick up the new ICP album on October 2nd, The Marvelous Missing Link, The Outtakes. Pick up Book of Souls by Iron Maiden, Repentless by Slayer, Kiss Alive. Go get some music, man. Go listen to some music. Pick up some vinyl. Actually, put the vinyl in your
your hands and put it down on the record. Put the needle on the record. Chicka, 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 put the needle on the record. Put the needle on the record. You can do that if you buy vinyl. Go do it and do it all through my Talk is Jericho Amazon links. And don't forget the fall leg of ICP's Marvelous Missing Link Tour kicks off November 2nd in Pittsburgh. I believe that's with POD. POD, man, Payable on Death. Good group of guys. That's a good bill. ICP, POD on TIJ. Sounds good to me. Go check that out. November 2nd, starting in Pittsburgh. You can find all those dates online. Speaking of dates online, WWE Y2J fall tour underway. Next stop this Friday, September 25th in Toronto, 26th Rochester, 27th Syracuse, October 2nd Trenton, October 3rd live on the WWE Network from Madison Square Garden. It's Y2J versus Kevin Owens in Y2J Chris Jericho's 25th wrestling anniversary. My first match was October 3rd, 1990, Pinoca, Alberta, all the way October 3rd, 2015. Madison Square Garden. I can't believe it. That's a long time, man. I've been doing this for you for a long time. I hope you like it. Saudi Arabia, I'm coming to visit you for the first time October 8th, 9th, and 10th. Mexico, returning to the land of where I started out, Merida, 16, Mexico City, Mexico DFA on the 17th, 18 in Monterrey, where it all started for me in Mexico. Then October 30th, the Kiss Navy, Kiss Cruise, Fozzy, Kiss, Steel Panther, Lita Ford, that is sold out, but we want to see you there. If you bought tickets, it's going to be so great. After that, Cinderblock Party, back to the UK and Europe with Nonpoint, Sumo Psycho. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information, all VIP information. It's going to be a great tour. Come spend the remainder of your holidays with us. We're going to be everywhere. France, Luxembourg, Germany, Austria, England, Wales. You'll find them dates at FozzyRock.com. Don't forget the big show in London on November 26th at the Islington Academy. You need to be there, man. You need to be there to support us, man. And last but not least, thanks to all you guys for listening to the show twice a week. Thanks to the sponsors who keep it for free, including Recovery Max. Order it now at drugstore.com. DraftKings, use my promo code Y2J to play for free. SeatGeek, use my promo code ChrisJ to get a $20 rebate off your first order. Invoice2Go, use my promo code Y2J to get Invoice2Go for as little as $9.99 a year. Burger King, Uber, and of course, Amazon once again. Go to podcast1.com. Click on the supporter show sponsors banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. We got links at Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A. That's a lot of shilling. Thanks for being here. I'm going to tell you right now who's going to be here on Friday. No more messing around. New movie coming out, The Green Inferno. Have you seen the previews for this? Looks insane. Looks absolutely insane, terrifying. And the guy behind this terrifying movie, one of my favorite people on the planet, Eli Roth, returns to talk about the amazing story of The Green Inferno. We're going to talk about Sleepaway Camp 2. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff. I love Eli. You love Eli. Eli, Eli. We all scream for Eli. Stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And we're going to say, yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.